Today we're going to be looking at two wives. We did this 3 weeks ago. Then I took a sabbatical to get spiritually fit in Alaska. And we're going to resume that. I want to thank Mark for helping me change my mind about things. Joe and Charlie stopped with the directions on the 12th step. And then we've been covering a vision for you. And he asked me why I don't do two wives. And I said, well, Joe and Charlie said it's not part of the directions, but Mark says it's part of the book. And so I said, okay, I'm going to change my mind. And I'm glad I did, because I've learned a lot from this chapter. And we're going to be doing two employers and family afterwards, and then a vision for you. And we covered some of two wives a few weeks ago, and we got to the point where they're going to describe the four types of alcoholics that you may have to deal with. And reading this, I realize why, I don't know why Bill W. wrote it and no one else, but there's some advantages to him writing on how alcoholics think and act, but he's not a wife. But we're on page 108. And so, reading it, I think there's several things. It's consistent with the way the big book's written, the style, and there's some really powerful stuff in here. And it really helps on how you would work with an alcoholic, you know, one alcoholic working with another. At the bottom of the page, they're talking about the struggle usually falls within one of four categories. And it says, one, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he doesn't see it. We're always the last to see it, aren't we? Sometimes he's a source of embarrassment to you and his friends, but he is positive he could handle his liquor, that it does him no harm, that drinking is necessary in his business. We just can't see ourselves. If we had videos of it, it might help us. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. A lot of people might think back to the, you know, if you were younger, if people thought you were an alcoholic, what you would have thought of them telling you. It says, this world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. So one of the questions I had is, how do you become a true alcoholic? What makes you a true alcoholic? I guess you become a true alcoholic by continuing to do the same behavior after a while, but what makes you a true alcoholic? And I think it's two things, control and choice. Can you control how much you're drinking? Do you have the power of choice? And so it's interesting, because then the next example, he says, your husband, number two, your husband showing lack of control. Lack of control of how much he drinks, and he's unable to stay in the water wagon even when he wants to, so he's having trouble with the power of choice. And so those two things are coming into play. He often gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but positive that he will do better. Anybody relate to that? And he has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. So he sees it's a problem. He's going to try to do better. He doesn't want his drinking to get out of hand, and he's going to try to cut back. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. So the delusion that he's like other people is starting to get smashed. Remember, the first step of recovery is we have to fully concede their innermost selves that we're alcoholic. The delusion that we're like other people has to be smashed. So he's beginning to concede it. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness. Anybody drink to treat their nervousness? What is nervousness? It's untreated alcoholism. It's anxiety. It's fear. It's restless. It's being irritable. Some people call it depression. He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts and tells you he wants to stop. May even take the solemn oath. Anybody take a solemn oath? Anybody write it down? Bill wrote it in the Bible and then was drunk 3 days later. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think once more how he can drink moderately the next time. So he doesn't really want to give up drinking, and he's going to try to change it and drink moderately. We think this person is in danger. Anybody think this person's in danger? And he's in danger, but he doesn't realize it yet. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. So he's describing in this paragraph a real alcoholic. So you could read this with a new person and ask them if any of this is coming true. And it would help them, maybe help them take their first steps. Perhaps he can still tend the business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to want to stop. And that's what Dr. Bob told the Oxford group when they had the special meeting for him to try to help Dr. Bob. They knew he had a problem. He admitted that he was a serious drinker, and he said he wanted to stop, and he couldn't do it. Now, and Dr. Bob went on to recover and be one of our founders. And I talked about the history Sunday night, and I put everybody to sleep. I could tell they were looking at the watches and. I know. So anyway, I didn't record that podcast or put it on the site, but I did another one that I did at home where I went through it in my own mind, and I thought it's pretty good if anybody's interested in it. If not, don't listen. Third type. This husband has gone much further than husband number two. Though once like number two, he became worse. His friends have now slipped away. His home is a near wreck, and he cannot hold a position. And actually, if you look at this, it's similar to Bill's story, where in the first 8 pages, he describes the progression of his alcoholism. And he's starting to become isolated. He can't work. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary round of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. You know, in those days, they put people away. Now we send them to treatment if they want to go. He admits he cannot drink like other people, so he's finally admitted that he's different, but doesn't see why. So he doesn't see why he can't drink like other people. So he feels bad that he can't do that. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so, and I think it says on page, it says that we still cling to the notion on page 30 that we can someday somehow control our drinking. And it says illusion is every alcoholic has this illusion. His case presents additional. He has come to the point where he desperately wants to stop but cannot. So people like this will show up here. And they know that this is a place that they can go where people have had a problem with drinking and they seem to have found a way out. His case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. Many of us were like this and came to AA like this. Now, here's number 4. You may have a husband of whom you completely despair. Well, that may be true for a lot of marriages where people aren't alcoholics, but in this one, they're talking about the alcoholic husband. Remember, there was only one woman in AA at the time the book was written, and she came in actually right when it's about to be published, so they changed it to 100 men and women. And she went on to found the National Commission for Alcoholism, Marty Mann. And she was sent by Henry Tebolt, the psychiatrist to AA. And Henry Tebolt eventually, he went to AA. He was an alcoholic, but he went to the meetings and observed what we were doing, and his writings on the way AA works is really powerful. And some of that we've seen in that second step proposition when we saw Henry Thiebault's idea about the ego, complete surrender of the ego, the narcissistic personality, how the ego rebuilds quickly. And we have to permanently surrender or else nothing changes. And so the husband has been placed in one institution after another. He's violent, appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. We've all seen that tragically. Perhaps he's had delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you've already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone. yet they got, well, in fact, a lot of the people that they worked with initially were in this category. And that's where they went to get new people. They went to the institutions. So four has lost control and choice, and is probably drinking all the time. And a lot of us were like that when we came in here at the end. So they're going to go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer over a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You have passed happy evenings together chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties, which would be dull without liquor. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has advantages when reasonably used. So this is someone who is probably going to may become an alcoholic, who's having issues with alcohol and in their family. It's affecting their family, or they wouldn't have even been making it a point. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. So we talked about the principles that we practice in all our affairs are in these chapters, because it says step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We carry the message of other alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. And actually, we're going to see that there are a lot of principles in these, what they call the lost chapters, or the how you practice it. And you says you should never be angry. So that's a principle. We should never be angry. Remember, it says anger is the luxury of dubious men. It doesn't say we can't get angry, but we shouldn't.
Dubious luxury.
All right, listen. It's early. I'm getting old. I can't remember everything. All right, calm down. This is a tough group. Stop it. So we talked about anger is the luxury, and I won't say it anymore. But you can begin to get the feeling of anger, but we don't want to stay angry. And so we learn tools to recognize that emotion, like Allah was saying at his birthday. And we don't want to stay angry. And we recognize when we start to get that, and we use the steps to change the way we see whatever's bothering us. Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. And you should be calm, no bitterness. Patience and good temper are most necessary. So one of the principles for success is that we should never be angry. We should be patient and have good temper. Be calm, loving, grateful, tolerant. Our next thought is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. Why do you think that's a good idea? Because he doesn't want to know. And he won't be interested in that. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. But it's hard when you care about someone to try not to help them when you see an obvious problem. It's very hard to detach, and this is where Al-Anon, and there's a lot of Al-Anon in the next few pages, has helped so many people. He will use that as an excuse to drink one more. He'll blame you. You know, she's such a nag, right? I had to go home to her, look what, blah, 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 and you hear it all the time. Especially when you do the four step, you hear how people have blamed other people for their drinking. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he's misunderstood. Was there anybody misunderstood here? This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, dash, not always another man. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends. That's hard to do. But can you detach? Can you detach that area of your life and deal with other people without that affecting you? That's hard to do. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life though your husband continues to drink. And we have some people here go to Al-Anon. I'm interested in what they think of these paragraphs. They're very well written. We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. That's another principle. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. And I think it's one of the things that's hard to get across to other people is that you're completely powerless. You cannot fix this. There's nothing you can do or say that's going to change this. We have no power. And I had to learn that with, people had to learn that with me, and I had to learn that with my son, and then he died, and I realized I had no power. And so we cannot fix this. Powerless. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. So that's another principle. We should always be reasonable and patient. This may lay the groundwork for friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you're not critical during such a discussion. It's hard to do. These are very hard suggestions. This is the pattern of behavior that has to be learned and practiced, just like we have to practice changing our character defects. We have to practice this way of living. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. When a discussion does arise, you might suggest he read this book. So they felt this book was very important and that this was going to help families, help people. The alcoholic would read this and be able to see himself in this and want to do the program. Or at least the chapter on alcoholism. Remember, the chapter on alcoholism is about the strange mental obsession that occurs right before the first drink, and how nothing can change that. They have no defense against it. Tell me you've been worried, though perhaps needlessly. You think he ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. Show him how you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of his health. Thus you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. He probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. You might suggest that you both take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. If this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject. But after a friendly talk, your husband will usually revive the topic himself. This may be patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you may try to help the wife of another serious drinker. So turn your thoughts to those you can help. Turn yourself away from this. You can't fix this problem. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. Suppose, however, that your husband fits the description number two, so now the disease has progressed. The same principles which apply to husband number one should be practiced, but after his next binge, ask him if he really would like to get over drinking for good. That's what Dr. Bob would ask the new person. Do you want to get over drinking for good? And then they would get down and they would do the third step. You would do it in the room, the first visit. They'd get right down on your knees and ask if you're willing to surrender to God this problem. Do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else, just would he like to? Would he like to get over drinking for good? The chances are he would. Show him a copy of this book. So this is very similar to what we do in working with others. Give him the book and tell him what you have found out about alcoholism. So if you're an alcoholic working with someone, you can tell him your experience. If you're not an alcoholic, you can tell him what you've learned from the book about alcoholism and share it with them. Show them that as alcoholics, the writers of this book understand. And now you can send them to AA. You could go to AA. But remember, there was no AA when the book was written. There were only three groups. Tell him some of the interesting stories you've read. If you think he will be shy of a spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism, which the final paragraph says, remember, you have no defense against the first drink. Your defense must come from a higher power. Then perhaps he will be interested enough to continue. Well, why would he be interested to continue after he reads the chapter on alcoholism? Well, because he's taking the first step. And then the next chapter, of course, is about changing our relationship with God. And then you get to how it works, which we read today. If he is enthusiastic, your cooperation will mean a great deal. If he is lukewarm or thinks he is not an alcoholic, we suggest you leave him alone. You can't take someone's first step for them. We just can't do it. Avoid urging him to follow our program. So they were very interested in people having to read the book, taking the first step, and wanting to take the action of the steps. But the seed has been planted in his mind. He knows that thousands of men, much like himself, have recovered. But don't remind him of this after he's been drinking, for he may be angry. Sooner or later, you're likely to find him reading the book once more. Wait until repeated stumbling convinces him he must act. For the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery may be delayed. I still remember Chuck C. many of you have listened to New Pair of Glasses, he described how he'd had a big one, and he had had it for 5 years. Continued to drink it. It was in his chair, and it was buried in there. And then he almost died. They revived him. He came back. He's sitting in the chair, and he notices this book. And then he said he surrendered. And he read the book and surrendered. And he was a very influential, powerful messenger of the program. Have you ever worked with someone and talked to someone, and then they blew you off, and then 3 years later, they're calling you? I had that happen. And they went to Valley Hope, and they're sober today. Giving a big book, talking to someone, it really depends on the attitude, and make sure you always leave your hand open so that they'll always be coming back to you. We had Stu and I had a guy who decided that he didn't need to go to the meetings. He decided that he wasn't going to come to the meetings, and I texted him that, you know, if he wants, if it feels like he can't do it on his own, we're here. You got my number, call us. We're always here to help you. But I was thinking, and I didn't say it. Can I say it now?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's helpful. What I always like to do is when someone makes these decisions is ask them who told them that was a good idea. And that whoever told them that going to meetings is a good idea is probably the same person that's going to tell them to go get a drink. It's the same thinking. But we've all seen that. That's why we worry when we don't see people or when they stop doing the things that has been helpful to them. Remember, the ego rebuilds quickly. Sooner or later, you're likely to find him reading the book once more, and then if you have a number three husband, you may be in luck. Being certain he wants to stop, you can go to him with his volume as joyfully as though you had struck oil. Because they really felt that this book was the solution and was the message that they were carrying to the world. He may not share your enthusiasm, but he is practically sure to read the book, and he may go for the program at once. So I think whether they want to read the book or not really depends how defeated they are, how miserable they are, how much pain they've had. And I remember my first sponsor, Cliff, always said, somebody was going on, he says, just buy more booze. And there's some truth to that. Alcohol will bring you to your knees eventually. Information, fear, and self-knowledge won't do it. He may share his, if he does not, you will probably not have long to wait. Again, you should not crowd him. Let him decide for himself. It's hard when you see people suffering not to want to help them. It's hard not to detach and not to want to just, but this is the kind of thing where we can't do it for them. They have to, we just travel the path. And so we have to be in a horizontal relationship with these people, not the vertical. We can't talk down to them. If we do that, then all we do is piss off another alcoholic, and they love to get pissed off at us, and then they'll blame us for their drinking. It says, let him decide for himself. Cheerfully see him through more sprees. It's hard to do this. Talk about his condition of this book only when he raises the issue. In some cases, it may be better to let someone outside the family present the book. You could call somebody from AA. You could have them come over if you knew somebody. That's what they do now. Usually call somebody that they know who's been in the program, and then they come over and talk to them. They can urge action without arousing hostility. If your husband is otherwise a normal individual, your chances are good at this stage. You would suppose that men, and really, if a normal individual, what do they mean by that? I wrote here, can they see the truth? Are they able to be constitutionally honest with themselves? Can they see the truth about their situation? And then hitting bottom, for me, is when you can't deny the truth anymore. You can't deny the truth of your situation. You've been completely defeated. You would suppose that men in the fourth classification would be quite hopeless, but that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. These are the people who are institutionalized. Their defeat seems certain, yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. And I wrote here, don't give up on anyone. You know, you don't give up on anyone. Just Make sure you're there when they're ready. There are exceptions. Some men have been so impaired by alcohol that they cannot stop. Sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. Some people have serious medical problems by this time. Some of them have serious neurologic problems. We don't see it too much anymore, but the wet brain used to be pretty common. Maybe they've changed what they put in booze. That could be true. You know, maybe they've changed some of the... sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. A good doctor or psychiatrist can tell you whether these complications are serious. In any event, try to have your husband read this book. So they had read this book how many times in here? 3, 4, 5 times. His reaction may be one of enthusiasm. If he's already committed to an institution but can convince you and your doctor that he means business, give him a chance to try our method. And that's what they did with the first people. The doctor said, listen, we've tried everything. You guys have a shot at it. See if you can help them. We make this recommendation with some confidence. For years, we've been working with alcoholics committed to institutions. Since this book was first published, AA has released thousands of alcoholics from asylums and hospitals of every kind. The majority have never returned. And I really like this. The power of God goes deep. I really like that line. You may have the reverse situation in your hands. Perhaps you have a husband who is at large, but who should be committed. Some men cannot or will not get over alcoholism. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing is to lock them up. But of course, a good doctor should always be consulted. Remember, if you're going to see somebody who's really drinking heavily, and they may be, you should never go alone. You should always go with another person. You don't know what's going to happen. Some people get really violent. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. And then now they're talking about the spouse, but sometimes you may start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such a woman adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. So now they're turning the attention to the person who's with the alcoholic and how they can have a life of peace and use this. And it says, if your husband's a drinker, you probably worry over what people are thinking. We're always worried what they think. We're always concerned about how we look to other people. It says on 115, you do not know what to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you become a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented. We find that most of this embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need to not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friends know the nature of his illness. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. We have to be on guard not to do that to anybody. When you have carefully explained to such people he's a sick person, you have created a new atmosphere. I don't know if alcoholism has changed the way people view it now. I think it's probably changed a lot because there are so many people who have recovered in AA. And so it may change the way people view that. I don't know. It says barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. I think Al-Anon's really helped a lot for these people. They have a place to go where they have fellowship and they have a program and they can get help for themselves. You will no longer be self-conscious or feel you must apologize, that your husband's a weak character, he has a disease. Your new courage, a good nature, and a lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. So you have to change. Then they talk about children and how you should change with children. And then they talk about with employers and how a lot of times the spouse has tried to protect the person from the kids and employers. And then I'm just going to read two more paragraphs on 116. It says there's another fear. And this is a fear that I think keeps a lot of people in bad situations. You're afraid he will lose his position, then you won't have the income. You're afraid what you're going to do, how you're going to pay the bills. Remember, when this book was written, many women were family. They took care of the family, their responsibilities in the home, and there wasn't a lot of two people working families. And there wasn't any welfare system, and our country was different in 1938-39. It was scary, and we just came through the Depression, which people were unable to work, and they had food lines and a different world. This experience may come to you, or you may have already had several times, should happen again, regarded in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. So maybe by losing his position, he'll change, or his things will have to change. You may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever, and now you know that he can stop if he will. Time after time, this apparent calamity has been a boon to us. I like this, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. So remember, God sometimes has to get their attention through circumstances so that people will change. It probably happened to everybody in this room. And then it says, I like this next paragraph. We have elsewhere remarked how much better life is lived on a spiritual plane. Now remember, in the original manuscript, it says, carry this message to everyone, especially alcoholics. They thought everybody would benefit from this message. I believe that. And your life is always better when lived on a spiritual plane. Now, listen to this. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. That's kind of like at the end of the sixth step, the riddle of our existence. If we can give our alcoholism to God, why can't we give him our rest of our character? You know, if he can remove the obsession to drink, he can remove my fear and my anger and my impatience and intolerance and all the crap we have. He says he could solve your problems. We wise found that, like everything else. Now, this is good stuff. They were afflicted with pride, self-pity, vanity, and all the things to which go up to make up the self-centered personality. We all suffer from self-centeredness. But remember, when the alcoholic, where self will run riot, and our selfishness kills us because it makes us seek alcohol as a solution. And then when we drink, we can't control it. And we were not above selfishness or dishonesty. As our husbands begin to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we begin to see the desirability of doing so too. And then remember, it talks about in restitution how the alcoholic may want to bring the spiritual life to the family. Discuss it this way. Now they're going the other way. If the alcoholic won't do it, bring the family to the spiritual life, and then they'll be able to deal better with the alcoholic. So I think this is good stuff. I'm going to stop there. I'm interested in what people think of this. It's got a lot of good information in there that we don't talk about a lot of the meetings.